Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Friday, everybody. Great to have you with us. And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Stock up for your weekend tailgate, even if it's in your own home. Today at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Red Sox win their way to the World Series last night. They'll get either the Dodgers or the Brewers. Talk about that a little bit later. First, let's get into what the Eagles are doing this weekend with the Carolina Panthers coming up. And joining us from KYW in Philadelphia, Matt Leon. Matt, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Good to be with you.
That game, no offense, looked easy.
Oh, it absolutely did. Giants have more issues than Vogue. I mean, they're really, they've got a lot of problems.
Did you? And I mean, did you practice that all day? That was good.
No, it just came to me. I didn't make the lineup. I stole it from somebody else, but it works.
It's a moment, man. Okay.
Yeah. But to their credit, Eagles took advantage. Yeah. They didn't. They came out, and I think everybody took a big exhale after that game because that was, I think, the complete type of performance people have expected out of the Eagles, and really, frankly, hadn't had until Thursday night.
Sometimes you just need a game like that to gain confidence. Are you, how important will this next one be to then show that that is the case?
It will be important because they're going to play a Carolina team on Sunday that's coming off a loss to the Redskins yesterday on the road.
Yep.
It's a big game in the conference, and I think kind of to your point, if they play well and can find a way to win Sunday, I think people feel like the train's starting to move again. And, you know, if they come out and they struggle and they get off to another slow start and, they lose that game or whatever, then I think all of a sudden people look at that Giants as a game as a one-off and right. More an indictment of New York than it is anything that the Eagles did. So I think this one is big. I would be surprised if the Eagles don't answer the bell because of that locker room and they're getting healthy and everything, but we'll have to wait and see.
Now let me follow up on the getting healthy part because, that's one thing about playing on Thursday night. That's not easy, but once you're done, you don't play until the next Sunday.
No, absolutely. And the one guy you're keeping an eye on is Jason Peters.
Yes.
Who
did not have a good game, by the way. I thought Olivier Vernon actually kind of had his way with him.
Yeah, and he has a biceps injury. We'll see. You know, Jason Peters has a way of being able to come back, and it sounds like I am obviously no doctor, but usually you hear a biceps and you think that's season ending. Apparently what Peters has is something you can play with. It's just a matter of getting it to a certain point where you can deal with it. So we'll have to wait and see with that. And also, Sidney Jones has a hamstring issue that when Doug Peterson the day after said week to week, and usually when Doug says a guy's week to week, that means they expect them to miss at least a game. So that'll hurt the depth in the secondary. But frankly, this is a Panthers receivers group that the Eagles should be able to handle a little shorthanded this week.
No, I agree with that. What about Lane Johnson?
He fought through that game on the bad ankle, played pretty well. I think he is probably at the top of the list of guys who will really benefit from the long week here and the extra time off. And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe he doesn't go Wednesday or is limited Wednesday and Thursday, stuff like that. But he was able to fight through the game against the Giants. And if you can fight through that game and then get a few extra days off, you got to feel pretty good about where he is.
And talk about feeling pretty good about where he is. What do you think about Carson Wentz and where he is? You know, because it's not only a question of shaking off the injury, but he had to shake off some rust. I mean, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, no, I think he is back up to speed of the game. I think one of the impressive things about him is, for the most part, since he's come back, there hasn't been any moments where you've looked at him and gone, oh boy, you know, is he ever going to be, you know, he's looked pretty much up to speed. I think the first game he came back against the Colts, there were some decisions that were a little questionable, and sure. You could just kind of chalk them up to, well, he hasn't played, you know, at this pace, at this speed for 10 months or whatever. I thought against the Giants, he did a great job. It was probably the best game we saw him as far as buying time in the pocket. And one of the best throws he's made this season was the first touchdown to Alshon Jeffrey when he rolled out to his right, threw across his body, and threw a dart, you know, into okay coverage with a bunch of Giants in the area. And I think that was the play that kind of let you know, okay, it's going to be a good night.
What has Jeffrey's return meant?
It's meant a lot. He's had a 100-yard game the first game. Wasn't much of a factor against the Vikings. I think that was more a factor of just how that game played out, that the Eagles didn't run a lot of plays early because they got out to a slow start. And then, he was 7 for whatever it was, 84, 2 touchdowns against the Giants. Probably could have caught 15 balls if they needed him to.
Sure.
But he's, you know, he's big. He's like getting a number one. I've always noticed him, it's amazing in baseball when a team gets a number one starting pitcher, how all of a sudden the rest of the rotation makes so much more sense.
That's right.
Because you got guys that slot in where you feel like they're where they should be. It's the same thing with him. You've got him at the top, all of a sudden take some of the pressure off Nelson Agholor, and things just make more sense down the road. So he's big. I mean, his catch radius, his size, he's a big red zone target. Getting him back has been a big, big deal here the last few games.
What did you think of Barkley?
Oh, he's phenomenal. I thought the screen. Now the cut he made on the 50-yard run was just absurd.
Phenomenal,
at the line of scrimmage there, the jump cut. I thought on one of his big pass catching runs, it might have been the screen pass. I don't want to take too much from. I thought the Eagles had some awful tackling attempts on him,
sure.
where he was able to run through three or four arm guys trying to arm tackle or trying to bounce off him, and that's not going to get it done. But I mean, what does it say about the state of the Giants when Barkley goes for 229 yards on 21 touches, and they only scored 13 points? You know, that shows how far behind the rest of that team is, and. My only concern with Barkley, and I know the NFL is a year-to-year league, and it's easy to go up and get better, but you just worry that a lot of his NFL tread is going to be wasted on some bad Giants teams while they try to figure things out and they try to figure out the quarterback position.
Right. Moving up, mentioned Carolina coming up. I got to ask you about Penn. How are they doing right now?
4-1. Last couple weeks have been Mr. Toad's wild ride, but They've found a way. Beat Columbia this past week, 13-10. Got
Good
a game sealing interception to win it. So 4-1, 1-1 in the Ivy League in a short week. Yale comes in on Friday.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks so much.
Thank you,
Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. Up next, Ben Jones, StateCollege.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Forget trick-or-treat. Sunbury Motors Ford is giving you all treats because they have to sell 7 new Fords every day now through Halloween. That's right, now through Halloween, they're doing what it takes to sell 7 new Fords every day. Just listen, Ford Escapes from under 20 grand. SMC has 53 2018 Escapes from 19,320. Choose from over 61 2018 F-150 trucks starting at $25,969.
They've sold over 40,000 Ford trucks over the past 103 years.
And needs to sell 7 Fords every day, now through Halloween. Buy a 2018 Ford Explorer starting at $31,705. SMC has 22 to choose from. There's also 13 2018 Ford Edges from $25,390. SMC is making it easier than ever because they need to sell 7 new Fords every day, now through Halloween. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Very pleased to be joined by Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Ben, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Steve.
All right, Ben, let's get to the game itself. It played out as one of those 3 to 3.5 hour trips to the dentist. What did you think as you watched it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I tweeted this, so there's evidence that I thought it too, that, you know, as that third quarter was going along, that Penn State was really, you know, sort of fixing to lose that game. They were letting Michigan State hang around. They couldn't quite get things going on offense in the second half. And you kind of knew that at some point here, you know, the defense is going to get tired. You've got to get off the field if you're the defense, and the offense can help you out a lot there. Mark D'Antonio is one of the best coaches in those late game situations for my money in terms of figuring out ways to, you know, squeeze out these wins and find ways to score late. He did exactly that. It's a game that Penn State probably should have won. You look at some of the interceptions that got dropped late there. You figure that this offense plays anything semblance, you know, anything that reminds you of the, you know, the week before, or 2 weeks ago, or even earlier in the season, you know, they get 28, 30 points on the board. They were there to be scored. They win this game. They feel a lot more comfortable. But, you know, if you want to point at the coaches a little bit for the Ohio State game and how that ended, I think in some respects you can point at the players in this one and say they could have executed a little bit better, could have caught some things, could have made some passes, could have caught some balls. So it all evens out in the end, I suppose. But yeah, your third quarter, you're sitting there thinking, you know, Penn State's trying to lose this game, and ultimately they did.
With all due respect to the defensive performance that Michigan State put together, and Michigan State did really well, especially the guys up front, Bocci in the middle. Let's give credit where credit's due. Are you surprised that we would have any point during the course of our talks during the season where we'd be talking about the offense?
Yeah, I mean, you would not have thought that Penn State's offense, for as good as Michigan State's defense played, like you said, especially up front, that they would have struggled to throw the ball, especially against this Michigan State defense, which had been their weakness a little bit. That would have been the area that you could exploit them. You know, and you saw that a little bit early. Trace, I think at one point was 5 for 5. He was at least 4 for 4, moved the ball down the field. They looked good. You went, okay, this makes sense. And in a lot of ways, it reminds me of the last time that these teams played. Last year where Penn State in the first half before the rain delay moved the ball pretty well through the air. It looked pretty good. And certainly, you know, you put 3 hours and 23 minutes or whatever it is between them and, you know, the rest of the game, things are going to be weird. But really after that rain delay, Penn State's offense didn't click quite the same. You could say that about the first and second half on Saturday, that it just didn't really come together. You figured that Miles Sanders was going to get slowed down at some point. He was going to be rattling off 40 and 70 yards. Touchdown runs or long runs, that is. But yeah, I mean, this offense, it looked a little bit out of sorts, and it could never quite get back on the, you know, on the tracks. Trace was hard on himself after the game. He looked, it's sort of uncharacteristic of us to ever have to talk about Trace being, you know, a guy that could have played better, because he's so often the guy that's carrying this offense. He wasn't as sharp. It certainly wasn't his fault, but, he probably could have played better. And that's kind of just sort of wraps it all up when your best player isn't even playing his best. Everybody else sort of followed suit.
And I mean, how important is it for them to win? And because winning can certainly change an attitude. How important is it for them if they can go into Bloomington and win this week?
Yeah, I think it's important because these guys are young. I mean, you can say about whether they ought to be playing better or worse, or if they're on par for where they are right now. But at the end of the day, a lot of these guys are young. They haven't played a lot of football. They haven't been through the ups and downs before, at least not in a starting role. So I think to go out and win and be able to, you know, we talk about basketball, see the ball go through the hoop. I think, that's going to be big for them, because Trace has seen it all. He'll be fine this week. He'll figure it out. But the fact of the matter is a lot of these guys are going to still be playing football for Penn State after Trace McSorley is no longer on this team. And they're going to have to figure out how to win without him. They're going to have to figure out how to win on their own. And going out and winning a game on the road against the Indiana team that's always, you know, whatever Penn State's record is against Indiana, Indiana is always sort of feisty, especially, you know, the past 5 years or so. I think definitely going on the road, getting away from home, because I think sometimes it's harder to lose at home, you know, in terms of the emotions. I think when you lose in front of your fans, that takes a little bit more wind out of your sails when you go on the road, and there's a lot of different things you can kind of chalk a loss up to. So I think if they can go to Bloomington, win that game, kind of see the ball go through the hoop, and then come back and take care of Iowa, suddenly you've got a little bit more momentum. Maybe the Big Ten East run is over for them. Maybe the playoff run is over for them. But we've seen year and year again that, you know, there's a lot more to play for, and certainly a lot of big games left to have kind of hang your hat on when this year is all said and done.
In fact, they're going to face a team in Indiana with Peyton Ramsey, a quarterback. So I give Tim Allen a lot of credit. I mean, last year he said, look, going forward, this is the guy we need. So they did take their lumps with him last year. Now we're starting to see him play pretty well. What do you think of Peyton Ramsey?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen Indiana over the years has had some pretty good quarterbacks and has had some,
right,
you know, guys that have been able to throw the ball down the field. Once you get him into a system where he's comfortable and is able to get weapons that he's comfortable with, you know, really the sky's the limit. I think, Indiana looked pretty good the past couple of years. We kind of forget a lot when we talk about the 2016 season that Indiana was up in that game in the fourth quarter. You know, Penn State ended up winning by 2 touchdowns, I think it was, with like a fumble 6 or something like that late. But, you know, Indiana's been comfortable in its own skin. Tom Allen's done a good job of making them that way. And I think Penn State, has been a team over the years that has struggled a little bit with quarterbacks that are able to throw it well. And you can maybe say that about any team that faces a good quarterback. But, you get a guy that's confident, a guy that's getting wins under his belt. And while certainly history would say that Penn State should be favored in this game, and I know in Vegas they're favored in this game, I don't think, especially now with 2 losses in a row, this Penn State team can't take anything for granted.
James Franklin has preached, and he preaches this over and over again, and preach is probably the wrong word, it's just the word I'm using at the moment, but he tells his team over and over and over again, remember, the team that makes the fewest mistakes is going to put itself in a position to win. Saturday, Michigan State, in the end, they got away with some mistakes, but they made the fewer mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of the reason why going into the Ohio State game, I didn't think that Penn State was going to win, and certainly they didn't, but not how I envisioned. I just thought, you look at the first few weeks of the season, Penn State had taken points off the board, they had had long plays called back, they just done, for lack of a better word, just sort of dumb things that were preventable, and that's hard to change overnight. You don't erase those mistakes overnight. And I thought, going into Ohio State, they were going to be that sort of team, whether they wanted it or not. And for the most part, they avoided those dumb mistakes. And then you go into Michigan State and you try and avoid them again. I obviously penalties hurt, but it was not so much a penalty filled game as it was just these moments where you go, I'd like that throw back. I'd like that interception attempt back. Mistakes that are not so much discipline or mental related. They're just sort of like things that you would like back. You'd like that read back. You'd like that call back, all these little things. And Michigan State, like you said, they made mistakes too. But sometimes it's just who makes the last mistake. And Penn State, for all intents and purposes, Imani, between the penalty or dropping, the game winning interception for all intents and purposes, and then getting a little turned around on that game winning touchdown. There are a lot of reasons why Penn State lost. It's not just him, but, he did make those last two mistakes, and ultimately it'll be on him and to kind of rebound from that, and I'm sure he will. He's played a lot of football. He's a confident guy. But like you said, and like James has said all year, you've got to make the fewest mistakes. You've got to win those turnover battles, and Penn State couldn't do it on Saturday.
Yeah, turnovers and penalties. Did you ever get and again, I have no answer for this, so I guess I'm going to go with what Mike Pereira, said on TV and the explanation he gave. But, and it's just a point of interest. I'm not saying this swings the game one way or the other. It's far from that. But what did you get an explanation on the pass where the arm was hit and went backwards 1.5 yards and out of bounds?
Yeah, I don't have an official one. My best guess, and having not looked up the rule and whatever rule Bible there is out there, my guess is that since you can't get hit into a intentional grounding, which is to say that they're not going to, if you get hit and throw it and they deem it's a throw and it goes forward and it would have been intentional grounding anyway, you can't get called for that.
Right.
My guess is that once they deem it a pass, that if you impacted the pass as a defender, it doesn't matter where it goes because then it becomes a fumble. That you're right. It doesn't make sense to me either. I mean, it's 1.5 yards, so maybe it doesn't matter, but you still, you look at that and go, I don't have an answer any more than you do, really. My guess is that they're just once they establish it the pass, they don't care where it goes, but that kind of goes against pretty much, you know, another set of rules that you don't fully understand. So I'm right there with you.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be fair about it. In other words, somebody calls up and says, what do you think about the ruling? I don't know. And usually I'm pretty good with rules. That one took me aback as to, because when I saw it, my common sense was, okay, he didn't intend to throw it there, but there's no doubt his arm's going forward, but that's where the direction the ball went. So isn't it, you know, and so that's where I approach, trying to approach the common sense of it. They know more about it than I do, and I want to be fair to them about it in terms of calling it.
Yeah, we say they know more about it than we do, but sometimes I wonder if
that is. And on that note, I think we'll call it a day. Ben, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yep, thanks for having me, Steve.
Next half hour, Tony Knopp on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And it's always great to sit down and visit with Tony Knott, talk about the business of sports. Hello, Tony, how are you?
Everything's going fantastic. Yeah, I hope things are good for you guys.
It is going really well. I mean, the
Sounds
last
good.
8 minutes.
I'm always listening.
Oh, good. That doubles our ratings.
Hey, you were bringing up the last 8 minutes. I wasn't even going to say anything about that.
That's all right, Tony. I had to. You know, it's just that they're that close. Okay. I want to start with the rider, unbeknownst to most of the world, because of the time of day it took place, the Ryder Cup was being played in the early morning hours in the East in Paris. It did not go well. Number one, what has Tiger Woods meant to a renaissance for the PGA Tour? And I'm going to guess that the corporate partners have taken great notice of his success.
So on the corporate side, on the TV side, it's fantastic. But I'm not sure I'd call it a renaissance, because I think people realize that he doesn't have that much longer left in him, right? You know, Tiger shows up when he's a kid and he wins the Masters in 1997, and you're looking at, you know, a possible career. You know, you've got 20 years with this guy. You're lining up sponsorship deals with him like AT&T did and Nike did, that are, you know, you're planning on a long-term future with him. You know, the same way people looked at LeBron James when he signed his life deal with Nike. This is more of the way the PGA Tour and the way the companies are looking at this is, okay, we're going to have this for a very short period of time. We've seen what happened last time he left. How do we leverage this asset to make sure that when he walks away the next time, or when he slides down the next time, who's going to be our next star? And that's the number one focus for everybody involved in that sport right now. Because what people don't realize is how much of an impact he had. Tiger's impact was so big when he fell off the map that Dick's Sporting Goods almost went out of business just on their golf business going down over 40% in 1 year. He, you know, people say, oh, you know, I want to watch the other golf, the traditional golfer will say, the purist will say, well, they only show Tiger. Yeah, because the Raiders are five times what they are without him. So people are tuning in to see. And, you know, it would be unrealistic to think we're getting another decade out of him.
All right, which then brings me to the next part. I think you bring up a really interesting topic I want to explore. That's one thing about the NBA. They've been able to go from Bird and Magic to Jordan, from Jordan to Kobe and Shaq, and Kobe and Shaq to LeBron. All right. In football, they've had that as well. But you and I both know that Brady is almost as old as we are. Well, actually, nobody's as old as I am. For the NFL, are you sensing they think Patrick Mahomes is that guy?
So here's what's interesting. It's interesting you talked about this, and we talked to some sports think tank guys pretty regularly that are, you know, futurists on the sport, and then a lot of guys in sports business who they just know things, right? And they're involved in all of this. What was really fascinating is you said the NBA went from Larry and Magic to Jordan to Kobe and Shaq, but there was a period in there where the ratings weren't that great, right? The 1993 after he won until he came back in 1997, and Jordan kind of saved everything. And you had the lockout, but then you also had a number of rule changes that really benefited the NBA's aesthetic and the style of play. Right? They looked
at it. They put scoring back in, and they took thuggery out of the game.
Exactly, because if you, I mean, you and I remember 1995 and 96. That was terrible. It was Hakeem Olajuwon and a couple of guys shooting threes against Ewing. It was awful basketball to watch.
I mean, when Charles Smith is deserved to be the artist out there, you do have a problem.
Right. And what they did, which was exactly what we were just talking about with Tiger, is they realized what life was like post-Michael Jordan. And they realized all of these flaws that they had that Michael was masking. And Michael left, and then Michael came back. And when Michael came back, they started to change the game in a way that enabled the Kobe and Shaq era to come. And then you had Dwayne Wade, and then you had this next level of superstar. And, you know, the NBA has become this global game. At the same time, they're investing heavily in 92, 96, and 2000 in the Olympic Games and just making this an international sport, right? You didn't have the Manu Ginobili's or anything of the world. And, you know, football's done a really great job of, they haven't done a great job of a lot of things, but they've done a really great job of changing the rules. That we all hate it, we bitch and complain about it, but the reality is now you look at this young crop of quarterbacks, you know, the Carson Wentz, Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson. You know, this was a position where 3-4 years ago we thought we had a dearth in. And they've changed the game so that it's palatable and it's appetizing. And golf needs to do that too. You know, Tiger's back. You now have him, just like Michael Jordan came back. What are you going to do to make this appealing in the post-Tiger world? And, you know, the FedEx Cup, it is working to make those last couple of tournaments more interesting. People are watching them more just because of the fact that the better players are coming. But they still haven't figured out a playoff picture. Same thing NASCAR has. That they haven't figured out a playoff picture that makes people care down the end, right?
All right. Yeah, well, exactly. That's exactly what the issue that they're running into right now with that. And again, the ability, the NBA did a great job of tonight. It is, let's bring the Patrick Ewing and the New York Knicks versus. It wasn't just the Knicks. They've been able to put the big name on the marquee. They've been able to do that in the NBA. The NFL's been doing more and more of that lately. Now, what is the national anthem issue, which, to the NFL's credit, was dying down and, to their credit, resurrected it? Has that done anything to corporate confidence in the NFL at all?
It does. It's done. It's been a problem in the Midwest and in what some would refer to as the flyover states. But what it's doing is it's cutting into this fan base, and it's cutting into the fan base in a way that it's requiring. It's almost like making people take sides. And some brands are taking sides and saying, look, we're taking the side based on where the customer is, where we believe the customer is going to be. You know, Nike, when they did this advertising agreement with Colin Kaepernick, if you read about it, they actually almost cut that arrangement last year. It came down to a final vote in an executive room where they all talked about it before one guy really stood up and said we need to do this. And Nike's really looking at us and saying, look, we're gonna ostracize a very large chunk of our customer base. What we are going to do is we're going to empower a large chunk of our customer base who just so happens to be the younger group, and we want that group to come up and have more influence or more, you know, appeal for our brand, which is exactly what they did with Steve Prefontaine, right? Like, nobody remembers that that's how Nike built this. They were edgy back then, and they're getting surrounded by the Under Armours and the, you know, the comeback of Puma and New Balance of the world. And this is a gamble based on numbers. This isn't feel. They're looking at this and saying the demographic that we believe is going to drive the most business for us is going to side with us, you know, on a much bigger play than they are. We're going to lose business on the higher end demographic or on the older end demographic. And so far with the stock price, it's working. Who knows if that's the way it's going to play out. But you can see that happening in boardrooms. Like, people don't want to talk about it. They never want to bring it up. We don't bring it up. And they're just trying to find a way to get away from it, especially the corporate partners. It is hot potato for them.
Yeah, no, it is a logistical nightmare for them to try and deal with, because look, you and I both know everybody wants to deal with the hunky-dory world. They don't want to deal with the politics of it.
Oh, 100%. And it's not just that. It's, you know, not every brand is Nike. Not every brand, you know, a lot of brands need to be appealing to the masses, or they just don't want to appeal at all, right? I'm not going to alienate 40% of a customer base, you know, in the hopes that 60% are going to be passionate about my brand. Well, look, Nike built their brand in, you know, if you read Shoe Dog and you do everything about how, you know, he built that brand, he built it around passion. He built it around Prefontaine. He built it around being a little bit alternative, right? you know, Caterpillar's not looking to be alternative, right? Microwave salespeople aren't looking to be alternative. They're selling, you know, a commodity. So it's different. So the rules that apply to Nike don't apply to most corporate sponsors, right? Most corporate sponsors are a commoditized business where I would rather just not be involved than have to be involved in a way that makes 60% love me and 40% hate me. And that's why this matters so much. Because other people say all the time, why don't they just handle this by, you know, whatever. There's, you know, 19 different outcomes that they've all studied and they've tried to understand. And the problem is the corporate dollar more than anything else.
You and I both know that the three major players have been Under Armour, Adidas, Nike. Under Armour split the stock and still went down at one point in price per share. I mean, that's bad when that happens. Now let's get to Adidas, because the trial is underway in New York right now.
Mm-hmm.
And their names being brought out, their schools being brought out. Now, all of these schools, of course, have corporate partners in other areas besides just the shoe endorsement and the apparel endorsement. Are corporate partners watching this particular trial and the dominoes of it when it deals to universities?
They, in a sense. I think it's going to have less effect on the universities than people think and on the common fan than people think. You know, what's been interesting about, you know, there's a lot of studies that have been released on this. It's been interesting about, you know, this generation of NBA player, which there's a great write-up yesterday about how it's moving to the European soccer model, right? The players have too much power. Jimmy Butler can just say, you know what, I'm out, right? I got another year on my contract, and I'm going to tell you where I'm going. And that all goes back to Adidas, Nike, Under Armour, and AAU system that's been prevalent since the mid-90s, right, when George Raveling and Sonny Vaccaro showed up and started throwing shoe money around to kids. So now they don't have loyalty to teams. They have loyalty to brands. And there's a lot of conversations that people don't talk about where it's like, hey, listen, if I as Nike can get Kevin Durant to the Warriors and I can, he'll give up a little bit of salary, but I can subsidize that with money, why wouldn't I do that? Because Under Armour's biggest spokesman is on that team. And by the way, the Chinese brand that just signed another major player to go along with Klay Thompson, they're also at Golden State. Right. So what people don't realize when they're talking about, you know, the power structure that comes from Adidas, Nike, Under Armour, others, is it's not just at the university level, it's at the NBA level, and it's at the junior level. So I think when this comes out and Louisville gets hammered and a number of teams get crushed by this, and my beloved USC Trojans basketball team, which got crushed by this last year because we cheated everything. When this all comes out, I just don't know if the regular fan's going to care. And I'm not sure that the corporate partner that sponsors the team is going to care that much either, because it's going to be one of those things where it's just so prevalent, right? It's not going to be one school. It's going to be so many that the fan is just going to say, look, it's like a steroid era. Everybody did it. Let's just forget it happened, right?
Well, I'm going to give you the great O.J. Mayo rumor, and I know you know this, but... Yeah, you know, people say, well, how did he get to USC? And the rumor has always been that he literally called the USC coaching staff the night before and said, I'll be there tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That was it.
No, that's not a rumor. They wrote that story's been released. That happened.
Yeah.
It was actually a fax saying, we're going to deliver you O.J. Mayo. He's going to call you tonight at 8 o'clock. And then he did. And the worst part about that was, because he came, Gabe Pruitt, Nick Young, and Tosh Gibson all left early. And Gibson and... Well, I guess Nick Young hasn't been much of a pro, but Gibson turned into a pretty good pro.
All right. Yeah, Taj Gibson's a really good pro. I have to ask you, the NHL, of course, expanded into Vegas last year. They've now started the pathway to get to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
The NBA is going to play a preseason game between Sacramento and Golden State, so Kevin Durant gets to go back where it started in Seattle. What does expansion do for... corporate partners, if anything?
Well, here's what's happening, and the sports fan might find this interesting. So Seattle is actually being run by this company called Oakview Group, and the Oakview Group is run by a guy named Tim Leitwicki.
Exactly.
For the common fan at home, what Tim Leitwicki was, the guy who built the Staples Center in Los Angeles. He was responsible for kind of the revitalization of downtown L.A., and then they took him to Toronto, and he kind of did the same thing there. So this guy's we're going to build up, you know, downtown districts and the team and everything around it. He's, you know, he's got the ability to do these things. But what Oakview is doing, which is really fascinating, is they're going to these brands and they're saying, listen, we want to sell it. They've created this arena alliance, And what it is it's 28 major arenas across North America. And if you're Walmart, for example, you can now come and buy a sponsorship from them, from Oakview Group. Instead of having to go to all 28 teams and try to negotiate, you can go to Oakview and say, I would like to sponsor 9 of your arena alliance teams. And they've all kind of partnered together, and they're selling these deals, and this sometimes involves club boxes and seats and all these things. And the common fan says, what the hell do I care about this, right? Why do I care that this is happening? Well, what it's doing is it's enabling teams that are in smaller markets that usually can't compete for that kind of sponsorship dollar to now be at the table. So this actually exists in college, so it's applicable to Penn State. You know, there are two major companies, Learfield, IMG. And what Learfield does is they have 107 universities, and they can go to a brand and they can say, you're looking to expand in Pac-10 country, or you're looking to expand in Big Ten country. We represent 7 of the teams. Instead of having to go and try to do deals with all 7, I can get you a deal that has Penn State, Michigan State, and Illinois. And it's enabling these universities now, who used to have to try to hire a staff that was going to go out and sell these things and have to fly to New York to get a New York brand to pay attention, to actually sit at the table and compete in this arms race with everybody else.
Yeah.
And so Seattle is the first time we're really seeing this in the pros. In college, this has been happening for a while, right? But in the pros, this is the first time we're really seeing, like, okay, this is going to be national interest with corporate brands, and it's going to enable them into that market and other markets. So it's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out. I think it's going to be a huge win, just because of they've got the model now. They've got the right expansion model. You know, Vegas was competitive in year one, a little bit more competitive than they wanted, but, you know,
yes,
the team doesn't come
I
in
agree
and
with
talk
that.
For 5 years, right?
No.
So that's the model.
Right. And, in fact, I'll give you an example. With Learfield, Learfield put together a multi-network deal because they have all these networks, with, for example, MyPillow. And so they were able to get sales with MyPillow and put it over several networks, including Penn State.
Exactly. And that's where you see it. And it goes all the way up. Some people think, like, well, that's great for smaller or medium-sized brands, but does that do things for big brands? Next time you see a Nissan sign at a college event, and you will, because they're at 100-plus universities, that's a Learfield deal.
The Nissan opening kickoff, opening tip-off has been on Penn State for years now. Baseball. Last night we watched an analytics game that did not involve the Giants or the Red Sox, so you and I can wear neutral game colors at
the time. The Giants are terrible.
I know. It's not, I like to believe it. I enjoyed the conversations much more. The Giants are really good.
The worst.
But it's some people saying that while analytics does a lot of great things, some people saying it's sterilizing the game and it's not helping the game. Okay, now because of what we're seeing, more strikeouts, more walks, more home runs, what is that doing to influence a corporate partner on excitement surrounding the game and getting younger people to watch the game?
Well, so that's the interesting thing about corporate partners is they trail the trend, right? So any trend has an adoption life cycle. Think a standard deviation curve, right? You know, there's trendsetters like Nike's trying to sell to, and then there are, you know, the corporate partners. And the corporate partners are generally a little bit further behind because they're trying to touch a age group. They're trying to touch a fan group. And, you know, so they know as that fan group's starting to, you know, silo out and they start to move their dollars away. And, you know, the analytics phase, it affects a number of different things. And that's where the sports need to be able to adapt to it. And I'll give an example. Football has been an analytics-based business now for the last 10 years. You know, the days of Corey Martin or Corey Dillon being the running back for your team for 10 years are long over.
Yeah,
the days of, you know, Curtis Martin being the same tailback for 9 years, that's long over. You have a tailback for 2 years, and that's it. So you have to find another way for that person to acclimate to the brand, understand the game, and find an exciting game. And now baseball has that problem because, one, you know, the lifetime of a major leaguer is shortening as far as being an all-star and being a superstar, right? We're seeing it move into a younger game. But also, you know, as the game becomes more analytics-based and you don't have those faces that you grew up with and there's so much free agent movement, the millennials don't watch it. And attendance was down. They released 2 days ago that attendance was down 5% this year across the league. That is a staggering number.
That's
when
gigantic.
You're talking about in a 10-year bull run. Can you imagine what the decline would be if we were in a recession? Right. So you're in a situation where you have the best economic environment possible for your sport to grow, and you drop 5%. That is astoundingly bad. And so what that means for corporate partners is they see all of these numbers on a regular basis. Most corporate sponsors and partners are analytics-driven themselves. And they sit down and they say, who goes to the game? Who am I trying to sell to? And listen, there are sports that try to sell to older, affluent people. Golf, for example. You watch golf, you see ads for Tiffany, BMW, Mercedes-Benz, things that you're not going to see when you're watching, you know, e-gaming or an e-sports game or a Major League Soccer game or whatever.
Yeah, lots of life insurance, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Life insurance, you know, financial planning, wealth management. You see, you know, the Pacific Life Whale over and over again. Schwab sponsors the Cup, you know, all that stuff. And that's what they're looking for, right? They're trying to sell to you and I. Well, yeah, okay. Yeah. I think about those things.
The great Tony Knapp. By the way, next time we have Tony on, we're going to talk about financially what it could mean to expand the college football playoff from 4 to 8 teams. So the next time we have Tony on, that's going to be one of the primary topics of conversation. What would the numbers look like with the expansion of the college football playoff from 4 to 8? So that's the next time with Tony. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 on News Radio 1070 WKOK.